Hi, good morning, everybody, and thank you for being here so early in the morning on our last day. As you know, I'm going to be talking about a community health governance model and the community health worker workforce at the center, a model to improve community health and the healthcare system. I would like to thank the organizers of this section for inviting me to present, and my co-workers that have us working to talk about these models. I hope I have enough time to get through all my slides. I'll do my best. So, of course, I do not have any personal relationships or commercial interests to disclose. There's nobody interested in trying to sell my stuff. Sorry. So our objectives today is we're going to be evaluate shift implementing population level approaches to health across the spectrum, describe a model of community health governance being developed in Rhode Island, describe how community health the community health governance model can be integrated into community health teams, and compare concepts of capacity building and social capital to improve community health, describe the path to lead to studying advanced payment models, which will be discussed much more through Rumana, and then describe how the 2000 culturally and linguistic appropriate services of class standards really asks for this work that we're developing. So just to go right off, so we're talking about community health workers at the core, CBOs or community-based organizations, and that's within the community. So in 2004, when I actually attended a minority health conference in New England, we started to do some collaboration with the Department of Health because they had state breakout sessions to talk about how to advance and talk about health disparities, and I was very impressed and naive, and because there was a lot of discussion about community-driven decision making, I was like, okay, we're there. We're actually really talking about this, and how do we do that? And we formed the Transcultural Community Health Initiative, as described, and the suggestion, and you'll see when I talk about a little bit about the history, was to have community health workers to use this opportunity to advance the community health worker workforce, which at the time were being called paraprofessionals. And so if you see, that's where I have the community health workers within the trusted community-based organizations having conversations with the community, and then having those conversations with larger stakeholders with the idea of bringing resources back into the community, having them be the ears and voice of the community. And we'll talk again about amplification of voice. We don't want to say that people don't have voice. They have voice, there's just people not listening. For people who are more linear, we have this model of having the community on the left with varying resources and challenges people may know or not know, and the community health worker helping to bridge that with other institutions. So I want to talk about, there's nothing new under the sun, really. And I'm a social medicine physician, and that has a long history. And it was Virchow, who is known really for his biomedicine. He's the father of cell pathology and the cell doctrine. He initiated the social medicine, and that was in 1848. He would say that medicine is a social science, and that politics are nothing but medicine on a grand scale. It spread worldwide, and so the next people you have are Sydney and Emily Clark from South Africa. Jack Geiger, who's right under them, went to South Africa and studied with them, and he's the one who brought back, they coined the term community-oriented primary care. This is where the community is part and parcel of the health centers to actually define what are the health issues in their community. That is what we had in our social medicine training. And it was and you also had to have those community members on your board, seriously on your board, not just titular kind of folks that are like, oh, we have a community, check. Sorry. Anyway, moving on. And then we had community health representatives in you know, within those clinics to be the face of the community. Most people don't know that Salvador Allende, who was the secretary and then elected president of Chile and who was later assassinated by the CIA, was also a social medicine physician. And then last, we have Jack Iger, who actually brought the community health, community-oriented primary care model here and studied with, continued to study with CARC and their colleagues to develop that model, and was the leader for the development of the community health movement and the promotion of community health representatives in clinics. And that's what I had when I was in medical school. Basically, I mean, in residency, basically communicating to the community that this is a friendly place and that your community is right here. And most people know about community health representatives as being, it's still only the only federally funded community health worker workforce. It's on Native American reservations, and I worked with in the Indian Health Service for 3 years after completing my residency program. So like I said, I came in naively, and so when we would have this, I have to thank my intern who's worked with me. She helped to put together a lot of these slides, and she put together this slide when I found from things that I was being told to answer, questions I was being told to answer before the funders would consider helping to promote this model. So she uses very strong language about, you know, oppressed communities, and why are we asking oppressed communities then to turn around and have it all answered in order to support the work that they're doing? But some of the questions that we were asked was to articulate the pathways, to define the occupation. So this is really back in 2006, 2007, so this is before the occupation was actually defined by the Department of Labor. You had the definition of current and projected demands, and some people will remember when we were doing a research, we were doing when we were looking at research that we needed to do to build the workforce. I actually said we need to have demand surveys, talking to stakeholders, you know, industry partners, and then sustainability. And so now we're doing that with the funding and looking at how payers can support the community health workers and social determinants of health. So that's what I've been working on for the past 10 years. Okay, just let you know. Yes, this is very appropriate for Halloween. I do think we should drive a stake through datification and impactfulness. But paradigms, I'm going to talk about paradigm shifting because there's a lot of paradigm shifting that we're demanding. And I would argue that we talk and talk and talk, but we don't do because we're not practiced in doing it. We still act under the old models. And so let's see where I have, talking about some of our shifts. A lot of it is going to talk about, you were talking about individual responsibility going to social benefit, vertical decision making to horizontal decision making. Who sets the agenda? Where is the location of power and expertise? Moving away from dichotomies of top down or bottom up, and figuring out how that it's and both, okay? Focus on process as opposed to outcomes, because of like, okay, you can have a community health worker, and if it's not successful, what was the process that you defined that community health worker? Is it because of the process that you don't really have a community health worker? And then you're having outcomes that say, oh, well, the community health worker didn't make a difference. Lastly, competition versus collaboration. We talk about collaboration, and this is full of collaboration, but, you know, I just finished putting in a grant, and everybody was asking, I would ask for support, and they say, oh, it's going to conflict because we're putting in the same grant. It's like, it's about partnerships. It's called, this grant's about building partnerships, but everyone is still in this competitive mode. So So I'm trying to try to move more quickly, but again, we're looking at shifting the governance, the power of the center of governance, talking about it not being the institution defining the agenda. It's the community. Who's driving the decision-making? Where's the locus of power? And it's the idea that leaders need to get out into the community continually, working with diverse participants, not just people who are phenotypically different, but who might have different diverse ideas, okay? And that convening of people in the community to support a buy-in process and creating new knowledge. The idea is that it needs to be, that they should be project task teams, but it's to explore how local and community-wide efforts can support each other in a collaborative process. And the idea is to envision a future where the community health worker is the hub of this process. So that, again, so that's that, the idea of where the locus of power is shifting. Defining, you know, the community health governance is, as again, as a participatory collaborative process that establishes locally tailored processes. And it usually involves many partnerships throughout their community. So here's our pathways, lays out pathways. This particular one, a lot of this work is from Lasker, which is called Broadening Participation. And so much of this comes from that particular explanation. And so one of the things that I'm going to really be talking about is how they don't have a community health worker at the center of the individuals that they're talking about in the community, and that's what we're seeing. They do have short proximal outcomes, which are about individual empowerment, bridging social ties, and synergy. And I actually really see the synergy is really around the community empowerment. And the idea is really that while you create a dialogue, it's not about one issue, it's about multiple issues. And multiple, you have to look at a series of projects. This is their schematic that they have for that, and let's see, I think I have something specifically written for that. Some of the issues that here is talking about how do you have the capacity of a diverse populations to work together, identify, understand, and solve problems. And these kinds of individuals, right, this is actually from the paper, understand and appreciate different perspectives, are able to bridge diverse cultures, and are comfortable sharing ideas and resources. So to me, that's what a community health worker does. I talked about some of the struggles here with collaboration. Here, the community health governance is based community program builds and strengthens existing networks, produce an iterative process that is responsive to community priorities to improve community health, and could be sustained through an advanced payment model. That's what we're looking at through the teams. As you see, they act to build social ties, empower individuals, and I say also the community. So this is how we've expanded it, and I don't have pictures of my community health workers except for one, but she's in, I'm going to talk about Mount Hope, where I live, and some of the programs there, but this is in Woonsocket, and this is a community health worker in the Laotian community. This is a community garden, which I'll talk about kind of as an example really quickly, I do have a picture of the community health workers, but they're not in that photo because the kids went out, sorry. This is a storytelling where we actually integrate some of the issues around some of the garden. And again, so you see our community health workers. Now you have several organizations that are forming, and I think people have heard of, like, you know, community boards. And then that's who develops programs, and then the same issue around going and talking, broadening the stakeholders to bring resources into the community. Measurement is huge, right? So this is, how do we measure that? There have been ways to do that, and we will be working on developing that. We are actually piloting a survey to look at empowerment. But community empowerment. So does our course and the work that people do afterwards empower the community health workers, and what's their perception of increased empowerment of the community? So we're looking at Mount Hope, and Mount Hope is right in College Hill. That's where Brown University is. This is looks at the racial segregation. So you're looking at whites. This is really a largely African American, and the purple are Asian. But if you look here as at the incomes, you can see that it's low income, the African American population. This is the bread line that was formed because we have a food pantry that's been there for now 30 years. We need to do something different, right? And so that's part of what we're going to be. I just got funded to create a coalition to increase food security, and we'll be looking at urban farming and urban gardening. This comes from Robert Wood Johnson's investigating what works, and it just shows you that there's other measurements to look at inputs. You know, community plans. In this particular case, we're going to be doing gardening, and then looking at the immediate, intermediate, and long-term outcomes. I just wanted to bring this. We don't have internet access, I don't think, but I was going to talk about. So, how do we implement this? So, when we did the commission to create the commission for health advocacy and health equity, there's a part in it that actually talks about developing the diverse workforce and talking about community health workers as being one specific workforce to do that with. And so the commission is charged to do that. I wanted to talk about quickly just tensions that, you know, that we've had 40 years of these types of collaborations in communities and as well as government are still unhappy with this process. And so this is another way of really kind of defining how do you develop that leadership. So basically, you know, in conclusion, we suggest that community health worker and the community governance models help to broaden participation of the community and with government agencies and other stakeholders, with communities health workers central to that. And this is instead of a single participant, such as a government agency, being in control, a broad array of people and organizations in the community decide what the process focuses on and how the work gets done. And lastly, wanted to really talk about the, you know, again, nothing new. 2000, when the class standards were discussed, there is the number, most of us are familiar with 4 through 7, which is linguistic having organizations having translators and appropriate services that way. But it's felt that all of the guidelines need to work together to impact minority health and improve health disparities. And specifically, number 12 asks for health institutions to collaborate with communities in formal and informal ways to create partnerships to improve the health. So we're still working on those areas from this responses, and we're going to hear a little bit more about sustainability and funding, the studies that we're doing to advocate for that for community health workers. And I really want to thank the community health workers section for organizing this session, and we'll have to thank Van and Tran for the student that has worked with me to put this together, especially Ramana Rabani, who, and the New England Regional Health Equity Council, for supporting the work that we've been doing for the payment work. And I'm very grateful for the community health workers that work. With me in Mount Hope. Thank you.